save the best for last. This is a guy who I've known probably almost as long as I've been on the internet. And I guess what really helped our relationship a tremendous amount was about 4 years ago, he came to Florida for a vacation, and I had the opportunity to go over and have lunch with him, and we ended up having, golly, a long, long lunch. And just a super intelligent, super nice, you know, right on the bleeding edge, really, of everything that's going on the web. He's very... He's you know, a phenomenal networker. He has a tremendous reach of people that he has befriended and have befriended him. And I found out today that he just signed a 2-book deal with Random House Publishing, one of the biggest publishers in the world. To get a 2-book deal, you know, right out of the gate, that's pretty incredible in itself. But I think you're going to find out as we go along, he's a pretty incredible guy. He's got a website, madeforsuccess.com. He is the host of Made for Success on TSTN. And I just got to tell you, if you haven't checked out TSTN, go over there, tstn.com. You'll see Chris a lot. He's got a daily show over there, and you know, he hosts some of the very best people in the world. And it's a really, really cool show. And I've had the pleasure to work with him. We did... the 2004 Jim Rohn event together. He was the MC of that event, a phenomenal MC. We've done a teleseminar together, Secrets of Influence, and I invited him. He's one of the very first people that we invited to our event in Atlanta coming up at the end of next week. So to close out our teletraining series, it couldn't be better than the guy who can teach you how to claim your power now with influence. And so, Mr. Chris Widener, are you out there?
I am. Thanks a lot for having me. Appreciate it very much, Vic.
Yeah. Well, Chris, I know that you have become, you know, through a lot of diligent work, and you have mentored, been a mentee of some of the best mentors there are in the field of leadership and influence, and you have become the new, I guess, the leader of the new generation of folks in that particular area. What can you tell us about how we can claim our power now with influence?
Well, you know, it's interesting, Vic, because my talk that I give around the country and, in fact, around the world, I've been to Singapore, I'm going to Cairo, Egypt here pretty quick, which is all kind of interesting considering everything that's going on in the Middle East right now. But the talk that I give is called Secrets of Influence, and so we're adjusting it a little bit to, you know, to fit the topic that we're doing tonight and then at the Claim Your Power conference. And it's actually, I kind of like it because Claim Your Power Now Through Influence reminds me very much of a quote that is in my book, 12 Pillars, and I had heard it before that, but it's a quote by Thomas Jefferson. A couple hundred years ago, Thomas Jefferson, writing in a letter to John Adams, said, "There's a natural aristocracy among men, the grounds of which is virtue and talent." And, you know, if you think about that, think about the context in which he said that. You know, they had all kind of come from this old world. And in the old world, the natural aristocracy among men was based not on virtue and talent, but it was based on who you were born to, or I guess who you were going to, you know, what family you could marry into. The problem with marrying into the family is in order to marry into a family of aristocracy, you had to come from a family of aristocracy. So the average person born in old Europe did not have access to becoming powerful or living a tremendous destiny or achieving the aristocracy or living at the highest levels in their community or their country. And so I love the context in which Jefferson writes to Adams and says, basically saying, in the old world, you had to be born into the right family to be aristocracy. But in the new world, in America, anybody can achieve greatness. Anybody can be the powerful. Anybody can be the rich. Anybody can be the people with the influence and the great relationships. Anybody can. And the grounds of how you, the grounds upon which you claim your power or your aristocracy, your wealth, is through virtue and talent. And I love that because I travel around the country and I talk about influence being based on your character and your skills. That when people are trying to decide whether or not they're going to allow you to influence them, they're making a decision. They're constantly making decisions, and it's based consciously and subconsciously on who they believe you are and what they believe you can do. And so the best thing we can do to have influence in the lives of other people, and the more influence we have, the more wealth we'll accumulate, the more power we'll have, the more, the more we'll raise up. We don't usually use the word aristocracy anymore in America in our common vernacular vocabulary, but to the highest levels of society. And the way you do that is very simple. It's through improving yourself in your character and in your skills, or as Jefferson would have said, in your virtue and your talent. Because the more we make of ourselves something of great character, and the more we make of ourselves something of increasing a skill base and becoming better and better at what we do, the more other people's perceptions of us change, and the more their perceptions change, the more they're, for the positive, the more they're attracted to us. Now, you see, influence is kind of interesting. I guess if we're going to talk about influence tonight, we should really come to a working definition of it so that we're all on the same page. Influence is simply the ability to change another person's thoughts, beliefs, or actions. The ability to change another person's thoughts, beliefs, or actions. So when you speak to people, when you write, when you engage with others, when you lead your team, your ability to influence them is based on your ability to change their thoughts, beliefs, or actions. If you can change your thoughts, beliefs, and actions, you have influence. If you can't change your thoughts, beliefs, or actions, you don't have influence. The people who are successful in life are people who understand what it means to have influence. Now, I want to suggest to you that influence is one of the key fundamental factors in success from the very beginning of your life to the very end of your life. Think about it for a moment. When you're 6 months old, do you have to influence anybody? Well, naturally, your first inclination is, well, no, you're 6 months old. You don't influence anybody. But think about it. If you have to change a thought, belief, or action, well, when you're 6 months old, you can't feed yourself. Somebody else has to feed you. So you got to get mom or dad to get up off the couch, change their actions, go get the food, and feed you. So how do you do that? Well, a very primitive form of influence is what babies do. They just scream. And they scream, and mom or dad go, oh, time to feed the baby. They get up, and they walk in, and they feed the baby. Now, if you're 40 years old tonight, and you're on this call, and you're still using that primitive method of screaming, you really need to listen up. And we might chuckle at that a little bit, but isn't it true? We find people who are adults who've never learned what it means to influence others, and they try to influence, and nobody listens, and so what do? They scream. They throw a fit. They throw a temper tantrum, right? So think about it, though. When you're, you know, later on in life, maybe 7th grade, or, you know, six or seven years old, 8 years old, you want a bike. But you can't buy a bike. You don't have the $100 for a bike, so you got to get mom or dad to change their actions, and you got to have them get you a bike. And so, you've improved your skills a little bit. You're no longer screaming, but you haven't perfected your ability to influence either, though. So if your kids are anything like my kids, this is the way at 7 or 8 years old they would have gotten a bike. They would have simply said, can I have a bike? Can I have a bike? I want a bike. Can I get a bike? Can I have a bike? I want a bike. Can I have a bike? Please, can I get a bike? I want a bike. Will you give me a bike? Please, please, please. I want a bike. I want a bike. Will you give me a bike? And pretty soon you say, yes, I'll get you a bike if you'll just be quiet. Now, have they influenced you? Absolutely. They've changed your thoughts, beliefs, or actions. But again, I would suggest that the people today, in this day and age, if you're 40 years old and you're still using the pestering mode of influence, probably not a good thing. Might want to listen up to a few things that we talk about tonight. Think about later on in high school. I'll speak from the male perspective. You want to go to prom with that good-looking girl. Well, you have to influence her. You have to change her thoughts because right now she thinks you're a dork. And so you have to kind of influence her to get her to, you know, to go out on the date. When you graduate high school, you have to influence a college admissions counselor to let you into college. When you get out of college, you have to influence a boss to give you a job. When you get that job, let's say you're a salesman, you have to influence clients to buy. When you want to get married, you have to influence the girl's dad to actually let the whole thing go through. When you want to buy a house, you have to influence a banker to give you a loan. All the way through life. When you have kids, you want to influence your kids to do the right thing. All the way to the end of your life. And let's certainly hope that when our kids are picking our nursing home, we have influence with those kids because we want them to put us in a good one, not a bad one. influence from the very beginning of life to the very end of life is important. Why? Because we live in a relationship world. We live in relationship with other people, and the people who succeed in life are people who understand how to influence other people so that they can get the things that they want, they can achieve the things that they want, and they can be successful. So again, then, what does it mean to have influence with other people? I have come to realize through all of my career in researching people and interviewing people. I've interviewed everybody from famous authors and speakers to, oh, in the last 6 months, interviewed the CEO of T-Mobile, the former CEO of Safeco Insurance, who's now running for the United States Senate. Just interviewed not too long ago the chief financial officer of Microsoft, and actually you mentioned TSTN, Vic. That's running this week on TSTN, my interview with John Connors, the former CFO of Microsoft. Very fascinating about how these men and women of great success have come to have great influence. What is it? It's character and skills. Now, there's two primary schools of thought in the area of influence. There's about four of us, really, that I know of that travel around the country specifically talking about this term influence. And there's two schools of thought. The other school of thought, not the school of thought which I adhere to, although I believe that it's important and true, it's not the fundamental one that I subscribe to, is called persuasion techniques. It's the school of thought that focuses in on persuasion techniques, or what I do to other people. You know, what do I do to other people? How do I convince other people? How do I make an argument? How do I handle objections? What do I do to them to get them to think and believe like I think and believe, or to do what I want them to do? And that's one school of thought. Now, do we need to know how to make a presentation? Do we need to know how to make an argument or convince people? Do we need to know how to handle objections? Absolutely. But there's a deeper school of thought that I found to be true in the great influencers. And the great influencers operate from, they derive their influence not from what they do to other people, persuasion techniques, but instead the school of thought that I adhere to is what I call the personal transformation school of thought. Not persuasion techniques, what you do to others, personal transformation, what you do to yourself. In other words, the subtitle of my typical seminar, Secrets of Influence, Becoming a Person Other People Want to Follow. See, if we make ourselves into the type of person that other people want to follow or want to buy from, it makes leadership and sales so much easier because we don't have to convince anybody of anything. When we have such a great perception in the mind of other people about who we are and what we can do, it makes selling to them so easy. It makes leading so easy. But the less of a perception that they have from us based on on who we are and what we can do, then the more we have to work in order to lead them or to have influence with them or sell to them. So the last, I guess, sort of thought I want to leave you with before we get into a few very specific things is that true influencers are more like fishermen than hunters. See, think about this for a moment. If you're hunting an animal, if you're hunting an animal, what does an animal do? The animal runs when you're hunting an animal. And it's human nature, when we feel like we're being hunted, when we feel like someone's trying to sell us on something, and all sales is influencing, and if you look at it that way, all of life is sales. We're selling all the time. We're influencing people about who we are and what we can do and what our business can do and all that kind of stuff. But when people feel like they're being hunted, when they don't necessarily know who you are, they don't have a deep sense of who you are and a deep respect and admiration for you, when all we're relying on is what we can do to them, the natural inclination is to run. But if we act more like fishermen, then the natural inclination of the animal is to come. So we need to fish rather than hunt. Well, think about that for a moment. I remember I was telling a guy on an airplane here a few months ago. He asked me what I do, and I was telling him, and then he said, tell me a little bit about your speech and your theories and all that. So I was telling him, and I got to this point, and I said, you know, there's three things you have to know about fishing. Do you know what they are? And he said, yeah, the first one is you have to have fish. And I go, okay, there's four things you have to know about fishing. Do you know what they are? First one, yeah, there's got to be fish. Second one, fish have to be hungry. The fish have to be hungry. I live on a half a mile of riverfront here in the Cascade Mountains just outside of Seattle. And you can throw a hook with the bait in the river at certain times of the day, and the fish aren't hungry, they're not going to eat. And so when we're influencing people, we have to perceive whether or not people are hungry. And, you know, a lot of people are building businesses, they're trying to make sales, they're trying to lead, and the people just don't care. They're not hungry, they're not interested in your product, your service, your business opportunity. They're just not interested in it. And that's okay. We can't influence those kinds of people unless we start hunting them. The problem is if we start hunting them, then they want to run away from us. It's better to wait until they're hungry. So one of the things that the successful influencer does who has power is they realize that you just have to, you know, go where the fish are hungry. There's plenty of fish in the sea. You know, when your girlfriend broke up with you when you were in high school and you'd feel bad about it, your mom would say, plenty of fish in the sea, you know, you'll find another one, right? Well, so there has to be fish. There has to be fish that are hungry. The third part is you have to have the right kind of bait. Now, there's, you know, if you put a tin can on the end of a hook and you throw it in the water, you're never going to catch anything. There's certain kinds of fish have certain kinds of bait. Certain kinds of fish have other kinds of bait that they're more attracted to. The principle about fishing for us in this area is that we are the bait. We're the bait. People are biting on us, not our product, not our service, all those things. They might be interested in those things. But, for example, let's say you have a tremendous product that you want to sell. And alone and in itself, in a vacuum, in a perfect world, everybody in the world would see the brilliance of this and buy it. However, if you're being sold this brilliant product by someone who you don't trust, you're not going to buy it. So really, the determining factor, they're not buying the product, they're buying you. And so, again, it brings us back to this thing that what can we do to become better bait? Well, the thing we can do to become better bait is improve our lives, to bring ourselves to be so successful and so admirable and so respectful and respected that other people want to follow us. They want to do business with us. You know, I mentioned that that being successful is a very great thing for attracting other people. I mean, think about it. The more successful you are, the more people are attracted to you. And the more successful you get, the more your success broadens, and it just builds and builds and builds. I always like to use the analogy of Michael Jordan, most successful basketball player in the history of the NBA, and now he still makes money by endorsements. Now, think about one of the things that he gets paid to endorse. Now, he does get him paid to he's paid to endorse tennis shoes or basketball shoes, which makes perfect sense because you're a basketball player, right? But he was so successful that now they pay him to endorse things that have nothing to do with basketball. And if, you know, whenever I'm in a major audience, I'll say, what's the number two thing that he advertises? And everybody says, underwear. Well, it's true. Underwear. Somebody pays him millions of dollars a year to stand up there and say, I wear Hanes underpants. Well, who cares? I mean, underpants is not brain surgery, is it? I mean, you need to know a color, you need to know a style, you need to know a size, and that's about it. And yet somebody will pay him millions of dollars. Why? Because he has influence. Why does he have influence? Because he's successful in another area or arena of life. Success is one of the best things you can do to have influence. You want to have more influence? Be successful right where you are right now. You're successful there. That'll give you a platform to become successful on a greater level, successful on a greater level, successful on a greater level. So when we're wishing our lives away, hoping, oh, I wish I was at this stage now. Well, the only way you get to this other stage is by being successful where you're at right now. We've got to make ourselves into attractive bait. Have you ever just stepped back and said, how attractive am I to other people? Now, again, I'm not talking physically attractive, although if you're physically attractive, that is actually a help. It's a help because people, they make snap judgments and first impressions and those things. But being good looking is not going to help you in the long run if you're not, you know, honest or if you're a jerk or, you know, whatever. But have you ever asked yourself, am I attractive to other people? Or do people want to be around me? Do I breed respect and trust in other people? Do they want to buy from me? And if they don't, then you've got an issue that we need to say, okay, I want to get to be the type of person other people want to follow. And then, of course, the last one is presentation. It's how you present yourself. I like to watch the fly fishermen out on our river behind us because I love the way they have to present that hook with the stuff tied onto the end of it. They present it in such a way that it looks like a fly. And so we have all sorts of things about presenting. It's the way we talk. It's the way we dress. It's the way we present ourselves. But those are the four parts of becoming a successful fisherman, is we we have to go where there's people. Well, there's all sorts of people. We have to go where the people are hungry for our products or services. We have to become the best bait that we can to be attractive to other people, and we have to make the best presentation that we can on the very surface level as well. It's an attraction business. Okay, so let's get to the nitty-gritty. What is attractive to other people? What makes other people want to follow us? Well, again, it comes down to this character and skills, and tonight I want to give you just a few of them to think about. The number one thing that you have to do to become attractive to other people so you can be a great leader and be a great salesperson is to have integrity. You have to have integrity. Now, I have gotten the last month or two to doing something very interesting. I don't even know where I got the idea, but it kind of popped into my brain one day. And I asked the question, how many of you, raise your hands, how many of you think that America or business people in America or businesses in America have an issue to some great degree with integrity? And usually two-thirds to three-quarters of the hands in the audience go up. And I think that's interesting. You know, everybody's sort of on the same page. Yeah, a lot of lack of integrity in American business. You know, you've got the Enrons and the WorldComs and, you know, all those kinds of things, right on down to the guy who's, you know, not being completely honest with you about the car he's selling you, right? So people raise their hands. Yeah, we got integrity issues. But then I ask this follow-up question, and I've never, ever had anybody raise their hand. It's fascinating. I ask, okay, now raise your hand if you personally have little or no integrity. And nobody ever raises their hand. You know why? Because everybody thinks they have integrity. They just think nobody else does. And what's interesting to me about that is it makes me wonder if we really know what it means to have integrity. Now, integrity is one of those words we throw around, and I think we use synonyms for it from time to time, and I'm not so sure that we necessarily understand what it really means. So I want to take you back to high school math. High school math, if you remember, there's a term that we used in high school math that shares the same root word with integrity. And, of course, if the lines were open, a number of you would say, and it's an integer, Chris. It's an integer. And you're right. It's an integer. Now, smarty pants, what is an integer? And those of you who are really sharp and listening well and can remember that far back to high school math, you'd say an integer is a whole number. It's divisible only by itself. Now, that's interesting because it means that the root word of integer and the root word of integrity means whole. It means we live our lives in such a way that we are whole. Now, let me get a little bit further and sort of develop this for you because it's not perfectly clear right away. It means it's not divided. Think about a pie. Pull the pie right out of the oven, and you take a look at it, and there hasn't been a knife touched it yet, and you're looking at it, you go, that's a whole pie. There's one piece. Now, you take a knife, and you slice it from one side to the other side. You've now divided the pie. It's no longer a whole pie. It's two parts. It's lost its integrity. It's not whole anymore. It's two parts. So how does that play itself out into the average daily life of a person to determine whether or not they have integrity or not? It means you have two parts. It means that when people are engaging with you, they don't know which one of you they're dealing with. Are they dealing with the person who tells the truth? Or are they dealing with the person inside of you that's willing to bend the truth for personal expediency? It means that you don't tell the truth sometimes and lie in other situations. It means that you don't treat some people one way but turn around and treat people of another race or another religion or another gender or whatever in a different way. That's a lack of integrity because you're not acting in a whole manner. You're divided, you're two-faced, you're double-tongued, you're, you know, how all these analogies that we want to use. It means that you don't pay your income tax on some of your income. Insert nervous laughter here, but you don't pay your income tax on other parts of your income. See, that would be a lack of integrity because you're divided into two or sometimes, unfortunately, more parts. So, Chris, does that mean we have to be perfect? No, we don't have to be perfect. In fact, nobody's perfect. We all make mistakes. We all break our own moral code from time to time. But I do not believe that people who follow us expect us to be perfect. But I think they do expect us that when we make a mistake, we're honest about it, we own up to it, and we admit it, and we rectify it. Think about another way that we use the word integrity. We use it in structural engineering, and we talk about the integrity of a structure. And, a 40-story building, they might find a little crack in it. You know, they're doing their inspections, and they find a crack might be six or eight inches long in the foundation. Now, is that 6 or 8 inch crack going to bring down that 40-story building? No. You probably need a 30-foot crack in order to bring down a 40-story building. But the problem with little cracks is left unchecked or left uncorrected, left unfixed, they grow into big cracks. So what's one of the most important things you can do tonight? And I'm not a pie in the sky, let's think warm, fuzzy thoughts and come to some thought somewhere down the road. No, I want to talk about things we can do tonight. Well, the number one thing you can do tonight is say, you know what, I'm going to be a person of integrity. I'm going to live my life in such a way that I live my life in a whole manner. And when I find a little crack in my life, and we all have them, we all have little cracks in our lives, and I think you probably know what they are. You might think, well, yeah, you're right, Chris. I'm not always honest, and I'm willing to bend the truth for my own favor and that kind of thing. That's something you can change tonight. You can say, I want to have more influence with people because I want to have more integrity. If you don't have integrity or you have cracks in your integrity, you know what? People are going to know. People are going to they're going to notice it, and they're never going to tell you. But they are going to be repelled away from you. You're going to try to sell them something, and they're going to go, nah, not interested. Why? Because they don't believe you. They don't trust you. People are not going to tell you, but they are going to be repelled away from you. But when you live life with such a great degree of integrity, people are attracted to you, and they believe you, and they buy from you, and they follow you. Why? Because when you tell them something and you engage with them, they know immediately that your word is your bond and you are trustworthy, and they follow. And it's much, much easier. Second thing that I want to talk to you about tonight is attitude. Now, there's tons of things that you can't change in life. You can't change the weather. You can't change the national economy. You can't change what's happening between Israel and the Hezbollah. Nothing you and I can do can change those things. But there are things that we can change. And we can change our attitude. And particularly, I want to tell you that tonight, the way to claim your power with influence, the way to become an influential person and rise through the ranks and become successful and live that American aristocracy, the American dream, is to have an attitude of optimism. To believe that the world is always going to become a better place. I do a little bit of work with some political figures, people who run for offices, governor, Senate, U.S. House of Representatives, and one of the things I always tell them is, we got to be optimistic. And they'll say, why? And I say, because I can't stand the mud in politics, and because optimism wins elections. A couple of professors did a linguistics study of the 15 elections prior to the one that George W. Bush won, and they codified certain words in the speeches of the candidates as positive and certain words as negative, and they found that in 14 of the previous 15 elections, the most optimistic person won each election. That's interesting. People are attracted to leaders and salespeople who are optimistic. I mean, imagine, in a couple of years here, we're going to have a couple people running for the United States presidency. And, you know, they do these debates, and they each get up there, and at the end of the debate, they say, time for final statements. Imagine for a moment if a person who was running for president got up there, looked into the camera, and said, if you'll vote for me, we'll probably have a depression, maybe just a recession, but interest rates will go up, gas prices will. We'll probably engage in another war, and you might lose your job. Vote for me November 4th. Nobody's going to vote for a person like that, are they? Why? Because we want to follow people who have an optimistic vision of the future. We want to be engaged by people who are going to lead us to a better place. Now, I know what some of you are thinking, because they're on every call and every crowd that I speak to. They're sitting there and they're thinking to themselves, hey, Chris, optimism, schmoptimism. You know, I am neither an optimist nor a pessimist. Indeed, I am a realist. And I always think to myself, well, la-ti-da. Because here's the fact. The fact is that every single human being is a realist. Because one of the things we don't understand is that realism is based in the present. Realism is simply your perception of the present. To be realistic is to say, here's what it is, here's where we're at, here's what it is, that's realistic. But every person is also, they're not only a realist, but they are also either an optimist or a pessimist. How so? Because realism is your perception of the present. Optimism and pessimism are your projections of the future. And the fact is you can be a realist and an optimist. It might be like a football coach who comes in at halftime and says, guys, we're under the gun. We're behind by 14 points. They're tough. They're clicking. Everything's working for them. But I believe we can still win this game if we do this and we do that and we execute and we run these plays and we stop their offense. And he is both a realist, understanding they're in a difficult situation, but he's also an optimist because he knows that the future can get better for them. Imagine that same coach who comes in, they're down by 14 points, and he says, guys, we're down by 14 points. You guys got stomped in that first half, and I got to tell you, we're probably going to lose this game. In fact, I don't see how we can win this game. Let's just go out and run the clock out. Nobody would want to follow a coach like that. We're not attracted to people who are not optimistic. So what's the number one way that we let other people know whether we're optimists or not? Well, it's in the words that we use. It's in the language that we use. When we use certain language, other people determine, again, either consciously or subconsciously, whether we're optimists or pessimists. There's an old proverb, and the proverb says that the tongue has the power of life and death. Think about that for a moment. The tongue is the power of life and death, and the words that we say can create life in people or they can create death in people. Optimistic words create life in people. Pessimistic words create death in people. And when we create life in people, they're attracted to us. When we create death in people, they're repelled from us. And most people, I believe, do not think they're pessimists. But I wonder if they've ever asked themselves how it is that they speak. Here's a very great thing that you can apply tonight. You can start applying today. You can just simply say, from now on, I'm going to listen to the words that I use. I'm going to listen to how I speak. I'm going to ask myself, what do I convey? Am I an optimist or am I a pessimist? When someone walks up to you and says, hey, how's it going? And you go, pretty good under the circumstances. Well, what in the world are you doing under the circumstances? But you are saying, well, you know, it's not really good and things probably won't get better. Now, I'm not suggesting you say something so cheesy and over the top as was said to me about a month ago. I called a guy up. He answered the phone. I said, hey, how's it going? And he said, if I was any better, I'd have to be twins. And if I was anybody else, I'd be jealous of myself. And I thought, okay, interesting. All right, so anyway, where do we go from here? And then we went on for the rest of our conversation. We don't have to be over-the-top cheesy like that, but I would suggest that it's very important for us to begin to say to ourselves, I need to be an optimist. I need to speak optimistically. I need to use positive language. You know, I even suggest to people that they quit calling it an alarm clock and they start calling it an opportunity clock, because every single day we wake to an alarm. Well, alarms are things that happen when the house is burning down or people are breaking in to kill you. That's what happens when alarms go off. When somebody's stealing your car, an alarm goes off. Alarms go off when something bad is happening. But opportunity, every single morning when the buzzer goes and the music turns on, we ought to be able to get up and say, it's another great day. Another day to achieve, another day to make a difference, another day to do something great. It's an opportunity clock, not an alarm clock. Think about all the language that we use and ask yourself, am I breathing life into other people or death in other people? In fact, do you know that the words that we use can actually and literally change the physiological response of another human being? Think about it. Let's say for a moment that a wife has gone to the hairstylist, and she's at home, and she beats her husband home that day, and he walks through the door, and he puts his briefcase down, and he sees his wife, and he notices she's been to the hairstylist, and he goes, what happened to your hair? What's going to happen? She's going to cringe. She's going to have a physiological response of negative feelings, maybe lack of confidence or sadness or doubt. She's going to literally cringe. She might even touch her hair and turn away. Why? He just used words. It was just words. Well, you know, they always say, sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. So untrue. Words actually convey life or death to other people. And let's give that guy another chance. Let's give him a chance to not be such a sap. Let's back him up out the front door and let him come back in and try it now that he's an optimist. He walks through the door. He puts down his briefcase, sees his wife spin to the hairstylist. He looks up and he goes, wow, you look beautiful. How's she going to feel? She's going to get a smile on her face. She's probably both literally and figuratively going to move toward you. She's literally being attracted to you, not repelling away from you. Why? Because you spoke words of life. I find all sorts of well-meaning people who they mean well, they want to be optimistic, but their words betray them. They say negative things and they kill off other people, and people don't want to be around them, and they just end up not wanting to be around them. So what can you do? starting tonight, you can be an optimist. You know, one question you can begin to ask yourself is, what good can come of this? You know, when something negative goes on, most people ask a very simple question. When something negative happens, they ask a single word question. Why? Why does this have to happen to me? Why does this always happen? Why did this have to happen now? Why? Well, that focuses on the problem. But here's a question that will focus you on an optimistic solution. Huh, what good can come from this? What good can come from this? Instead of going, oh no, it's terrible, it's rotten, it's bad, we say, what good could come from this? And then we begin to focus on the solutions. The last thing I want to talk to you about tonight is relationships. Relationships, it's all about relationships, and successful influencers, people who have tremendous power, are people who understand about how to create, develop, and maintain successful, healthy relationships. I'll tell you a story of what I call the $20 million relationship. I was asked to speak at Cisco Systems a number of years ago and remembered that my brother-in-law actually was a buyer for a large retail chain with about 1,000 stores, and he was in that business of networking all the stores together, actually quite high up. And I called him up and said, hey, do you ever buy Cisco stuff? And he said, yeah, we buy almost exclusively Cisco stuff. And I thought, well, that's interesting. Cool. That's great because I'm going to speak to Cisco. I said, what are the other companies? He said, Nortel, Lucent, F5. There's other companies that sell similar products, but we buy almost exclusively Cisco product. And I thought, man, I've hit the mother load of research. So tell me why. Is it the product that much better? No, not really. Well, is it the price? Is the price that much better? No, they're all pretty competitive. Was it the warranty? No, they all have a good warranty. Is it the service? No, it's not really the service. I went through this whole litany of things to find out, oh, because my brother-in-law, I forgot to tell you this, he has purchases $6 to $7 million a year of Cisco product, $20 million over 3 years. So I go, if it's not the service, it's not the price, it's not the warranty, it's not the product, what is it? He goes, Chris, it's simple. We like their sales guy better. Now, whether it's moral, immoral, amoral, I don't know, but the fact is people do business with people they like. People have relationships with people they like, whether people have relationships with businesses that they like. When was the last time you left a restaurant and turned to your spouse and said, terrible food, terrible service, let's come back next Wednesday? We just don't do it. When was the last time you created a list of people you wanted to invite over for your holiday party and said, let's invite the Joneses, we can't stand them? Nobody does. I mean, about the only people you have to invite to your Christmas party who you don't like are certain members of your family. But other than that, we invite the people we like, right? So what's the question we ask ourselves tonight? If you want to have more influence, maybe, just maybe, we have to ask ourselves a very interesting question. Am I likable? Do people like me? Because liking people is what runs the world. You know, they always say it's not what you know, it's who you know. It's true. And it's who you know that'll get you the job. And if they like you, they'll get a job. You'll be able to move up the ranks. People like you. In fact, it was just interesting. I was watching a woman give a speech. And it was really interesting. I can't remember her name, but it's actually on TSTN again, on the network TSTN. And she wrote a book called Nice Girls Don't Get the Corner Office, if I remember right. But she was talking about how women think in the corporate world, they think that the way to move up the corporate ladder is to work hard and, you know, all these things. And we do have to work hard and do great work. But she said that women in particular will skip the off-site meetings. They don't go to the golf matches and they don't go to the little retreats and things like that because they think the best thing I can do to move up the ladder is to work hard and do a great job. But what she says they're missing is that's not the way you move up the corporate ladder. You can't be liked and likable if you're sitting in the corner office or in the office while everybody else is out golfing around together and enjoying a beer together. That, unfortunately, again, moral, immoral, amoral, I don't know. But the fact is that people who are liked move up the ladder. You know, everybody might say, well, Chris, what about Donald Trump? Okay, fine, Donald Trump. Nobody likes him. He's a grump. But other than Donald Trump, name me somebody who's severely disliked, who makes it very long for very far, or makes it very far for very long. Very few people, because we don't like to be around people we don't like. So what is it that makes people likable? Again, some very practical things. And I hate to say it, but there's some people on the call tonight probably who other people don't like you. They think you're grumpy. They think they think you're a curmudgeon, or they don't like the way you do business, or they whatever. They think you're a pessimist. They don't want to be around you, and it's impacting your ability to claim your power, to achieve your destiny, to become that aristocracy, to have and be a person of influence. So what does it mean to be likable? I think there's just some very simple practical things. Be willing to laugh. take it easy. Don't be so serious. Enjoy yourself. Ask other questions of the other person. Be interested rather than be interesting. You know, people, we think, well, we just have to be interested, interesting, you know, but that's what we do to other people. You know, that's what we do to other people. But being interested is where we say, tell me about you. Tell me what you're like. What do you think? What's this? You know, and people love to be around people like that. The basic overriding principle that I tell people, if you want to have healthy relationships, successful relationships, is simply this. Consider other people's interests more important than your own. Consider other people's interests more important than your own. If everybody you have a relationship with thinks that you consider their interests more important than your own, you're going to be liked. You're going to be a likable person. People want to do business with you. People are going to want to buy from you. People are going to want to follow you because they're going to know that you're taking their interest into mind. And that's imperative for people who want to create, develop, and maintain healthy relationships. So sort of a recap. If you want to have influence, you got to understand that influence is important from the very beginning to the very end of life. We have to understand that it's more about fishing than hunting because it's really about attraction. It's about making ourselves into people that other people want to follow or they want to buy from or they want to do business deals with. That's what it means to have influence. And the number one, two, and three ways that we do that is we have to live a life of incredible integrity. And when we break our integrity, we admit it, we rectify it, and we go on with it. People will allow us to make mistakes as long as we admit them and rectify them. We've got to be optimistic people who breathe life into other people through the way that we speak, who focus on solutions rather than problems. And we have to be the kind of people who create, develop, and maintain relationships primarily through being likable. And the way that we're likable is by considering others' interests more important than our own. When you do that, when you start putting all those pieces together, and then, you know, we talk actually, Vic has the Secrets of Influence that he sells, where we did on four consecutive teleconferences. We go into a lot of other things, in fact, nine other things, about how to live priorities, how to be a time manager, how to make decisions, you know, all those kinds of things. But these are the three primary ones that you can begin to work on tonight. And they're character issues. They're issues of who you are, and the more you have integrity, become an optimist, and develop, you know, become a person who considers others' interests more important than their own, people are going to view you in a respected, admirable way, and they're going to be attracted to you. You're going to have more influence. Having more influence is going to help you gain power in your life, and you're going to be able to achieve your destiny and live your dreams.
Awesome, man. Fantastic. Jeez, goodness, Chris. Thanks a lot. What a powerful presentation, folks. And what I'm going to do, because we're going to run out of time here pretty quickly, I'm going to open it up now for some questions. So, Tom, go ahead.
Yeah, hey, Chris and Vic. It's Tom in Connecticut. I had the pleasure of seeing you in Anaheim with Jim Rohn a couple of years ago, and you did an amazing job. I'm still at the stage where I'm absorbing all this information from a number of different speakers and authors. And I know Mr. Rohn has said, you know, beware of somebody with a new fundamental. And I was just wondering what your advice might be as far as what speakers and authors we pay attention to as far as the personal development field goes.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I like to tell people that I read dead guys. You know, I like to read people who aren't around anymore. And the reason why is because I really believe that the general principles of success in life are timeless principles. They're not vogue principles. They're timeless principles. And so, I mean, any of the great legends, you know, any of the books written by people from the past, James Allen, As a Man Thinketh, Think and Grow Rich, any books by Og Mandino, books like that are really great places to start. You know why? Because 100 years later, we still go, oh yeah, these things are true. They're not just something that comes up and it's new and it's flashy. And I mean, how often have we bought into something that was the new and flashy an idea, and you know, 6 years later, nobody thinks it anymore, nobody applies it or whatever. So I would suggest starting with the classics, but then people, again, who've been around a long time, Zig Ziglar, Jim Rohn, Brian Tracy, Dennis Waitley, you know, those kinds of things. And then you know, it certainly doesn't mean we shouldn't read new people. I mean, I wouldn't have a career if people didn't read new people. And I think I've got a couple of pretty good books. But I think the thing that is probably the most encouraging to me is when people say, you know what, your books are so basic. They're so fundamental. They're timeless. These are things that I needed to hear again. You know, G.K. Chesterton, the old Catholic theologian, he said people need to be reminded a lot more than they need to be instructed. And it's really true. The basics of life are actually quite easy. It's a matter of applying them regularly and thoroughly. So I would suggest starting with the old stuff, mastering the classics, and continually reminding yourself. And when you read some new Vogue content, if it's got some new secret, you know, that you've never heard before, I'd take it with a grain of salt. Stick to the tried and true, the stuff that's really worked.
That's great. Thank you.
Yep.
Good question. Who else has a question?
Hello. I want to say hello and thank you, Vic and Chris. I've really enjoyed this. Do you have a website address?
Yes. Chris's website is madeforsuccess.com.
Mm-hmm.
Chris, you got any other ones you want to promote?
Thank you.
Yeah, they can take a look at either Made for Success or chriswidener.com. And Made for Success is M-A-D-E-F-O-R, success.com. Chris Widener, C-H-R-I-S-W-I-D-E-N-E-R, and we got lots of resources on both of them that you'd be interested in.
Thank you, and good luck to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. And I would also say that at least it would be remiss, I would be remiss if I let Chris share everything that he shared with us tonight and not ask him to share a little bit about something brand new. I believe it comes out tomorrow or in the next couple of days. Chris, I think you got a new book.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I actually do have a book coming out just in the next couple of days. We're supposed to get it back from the printer, and it's called The Image, and I'm really excited about it because it deals particularly with people of faith, people who are interested in spirituality, and a lot of times people wonder if you can be spiritual and be successful in the business world, if you can be a person of faith but also be very ambitious. And again, in a fictional little book like my books have been, it draws attention to the fact that you can be a spiritual person, a successful spiritual person, and you can be successful in the business world as well. You can be ambitious, you can set goals and that kind of thing. That book will be available at chriswidener.com, and you'll just have to check back there. I don't know when it's actually going up, but if you sign up for our e-zine at chriswidener.com, here in the next few weeks, you'll probably get a little email on that book coming out. So particularly if you consider yourself a person of faith and spirituality, that would be a very good book for you to pick up because it's a good, encouraging thing about how you can be ambitious and successful and materially blessed and not have to think that maybe you're, you know, going against your faith or spirituality or whatever. So, yeah, that's brand new, coming out this week.
Oh, okay, maybe time for one or two more questions. Who else has
Chris, this is Honey from Iowa.
Hey, Honey.
Hey. Yeah, I just wanted to make a comment on your statement that, and I'm really glad you're bringing out that book, that you said, you know, women shouldn't be in the corner office, and I truly believe that's true. But I want you to, you know, maybe explain more to the people that it doesn't mean you have to take up, you know, I mean, I think it's your attitude towards drinking. You know, I choose not to drink, and that's just my own personal thing. But I don't judge people that do. And so when I'm having fun with everybody else and people want to know what I'm drinking, you know, and I think it has a lot to do with your attitude towards those people. That,
yeah, the point isn't whether you drink or not, but the point is that this woman was making. I wasn't making the point. I was just reiterating what this New York Times bestselling author said, was that a lot of women, and some men do it. It was just, she just happened to be an expert on women's issues. She said that people think, oh, well, the way to get ahead is to work hard and all that kind of stuff, and they misjudge the value of building relationships, and it means that they skip the events like going out and hanging out with the people that they work with, or the bosses or whatever. So the point there really was that it's just important to have relationships with the people around you than it is to be the smartest or the best or the hardest worker or whatever. I mean, think back to high school. You know what? Adults are really just like grown-up high schoolers, really. You know, you could have a bunch of people who run for student body president, and one of them is the class valedictorian and the other's the hardest worker and, you know, whatever. But who gets elected? the people that people like, right? And so that's the important thing is, and I wouldn't, again, I don't suggest that you compromise your integrity or anything like that. That's
absolutely
a given. But the fact is that people who get ahead are liked by other people. And I don't know if we take that as seriously as we might if we want to understand what it means to have influence with other people.
And do you think that's the corporate influence that, you know, they just feel like, you know, it's all business and no fun? And is that from the higher-ups, do you think?
No. I think it's natural. I think all through life. That's why I gave the high school example. You
uh-huh.
know, being the smartest kid and having all A's doesn't guarantee you get voted student body president. It's whether or not people like you or not, whether people trust you or not. I mean, if the smartest people in the world made all the money and had all the power, we'd be ruled by a class of college professors. And yet that's not what happens. The people who get ahead and make the most money and have the most power are people who understand how to go out, be aggressive, be ambitious, apply good business principles. But generally one of the things you'll find about most of them is they're pretty likable people.
Awesome. I'm anxious to get your book. Thank you.
Yes,
and I've
sir,
got your other book, The Angel.
Oh, yeah, The Angel Inside, yeah.
Angels Inside. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, thank you.
Mr. Chris, really, I appreciate so much your time tonight, and I think you heard from the responses that they appreciated it as well.
My great pleasure being here tonight. And between now and Atlanta, I go to Salt Lake City, Dallas, and Orlando. So
wow.
I got a busy schedule before then, but I'm excited to be there and see you again, Vic, and then all the folks that are going to be there. It's going to be a great time.
Fantastic. Well, what I'm going to do, folks, I'm going to unmute us again so everyone can say goodbye. It's been a pleasure to do these training calls. It's really been fun to do them. We're going to have 9 solid hours of training that you'll be able to come back and refer to. You can download these MP3s, put them on your iPod, you know, when you do your cardio, listen to Chris teaching on influence, and listen to it, you know, not just one time, but put it in your library and go back and revisit it 30 days from now and 90 days from now and see how you've grown and where you may be then. You'll hear something new and different each time you listen to it. Everyone have a good evening.
And thank you, Vic, and thank you, Chris.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks.
God bless you both.